This sermon was delivered at Grand Avenue Baptist Church, a gospel-centered church in Ames, Iowa. Hear more sermons and learn more about Grand Avenue at gabcames.org.
Our scripture reading this morning is Isaiah chapter 41, verses 1 through 20, and it can be found on page 10 of your service guide. Please stand for the reading of God's word. Listen to me in silence, O coastlands. Let the peoples renew their strength. Let them approach, then let them speak. Let us together draw near for judgment. Who stirred up one from the east, whom victory meets at every step? He gives up nations before him, so that he tramples kings underfoot. He makes them like dust with his sword, like driven stubble with his bow. He pursues them and passes on safely by paths his feet have not trod. Who has performed and done this, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, the first and with the last, I am he. The coastlands have seen and are afraid. The ends of the earth tremble. They have drawn near and come. Everyone helps his neighbor and says to his brother, be strong. The craftsman strengthens the goldsmith, and he who smooths with the hammer, him who strikes the anvil, saying of the soldering, it is good. And they strengthen it with nails so that it cannot be moved. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend, you who I took from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest corners, saying to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you off. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Behold, all who are incensed against you shall be put to shame and confounded. Those who strive against you shall be as nothing and shall perish. You shall seek those who contend with you, but you shall not find them. Those who war against you shall be as nothing at all. For I, the Lord your God, hold your right hand. It is I who say to you, fear not. I am the one who helps you. Fear not, you worm, Jacob, you men of Israel. I am the one who helps you, declares the Lord. Your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. Behold, I make of you a threshing sledge, new, sharp, and having teeth. You shall thresh the mountains and crush them, and you shall make the hills like chaff. You shall winnow them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the tempest shall scatter them. And you shall rejoice in the Lord. In the Holy One of Israel you shall glory. When the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst, I, the Lord, will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers on the bare heights and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, and the dry land springs of water. I will put in the wilderness the cedar, the acacia, the myrtle, and the olive. I will set in the desert the cypress, the plane, and the pine together, that they may see and know, may consider and understand together, that the hand of the Lord has done this. The Holy One of Israel has created it. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning, everybody. It's good to be with you. Today. If you don't know me, I know Tim mentioned, my name is John. I'm one of the members here at Grand, and I have the special privilege of preaching to you the Word of God today. If you were to ask, sorry, I've got to move this gray thing. I'm not on. Okay. Is this on? Okay. All right. Sorry. If I were to ask you, what is your greatest fear, what would you say? Some of you might say things terrible like tangible, like the dark or snakes. I know that's one for Amanda. Or maybe you're afraid of heights. Others of you might say something more obscure like you fear chaos, a lack of control, or maybe not having significance in the world. This morning, we're looking at a passage where God speaks to the fears of his people. And the way he does this is through prophetic imagery that at times may seem disconnected and obscure. At least it did to me. And I would presume that as we read through the passage this morning, you maybe felt that. And it actually has asked me, it caused me to ask a lot of questions of how I bring this text to you this morning. So we're going to do something a little different today, something I don't think we've done before, and it requires your participation. This morning, I'm going to ask you to use your imagination as we walk through the text. Isaiah 41 is full of imagery. And when we read a text, any text, a book, the main place we experience the images from the text is in our imaginations. We put things together to see things so that we can understand what's going on. Sometimes I think the best way to see an image in our mind is to close our eyes while someone verbally describes the scene. And this is what I want to do this morning, sort of, not exactly. My goal is to help you picture some of what Isaiah may have been picturing as he wrote the things that he wrote. I'm not looking for you to disconnect from reality or import new meaning into the text that isn't there. I'm looking to help you fully engage what we've read and to feel and understand what's being presented by Isaiah. So I'm going to describe these scenes. And at times, I'm going to bring details in that may not be in the text itself, but know that these details are coming from either the surrounding context of Isaiah or from the broader scope of history, or there's intentionality with everything that I'm doing. It's not haphazard. I don't do it lightly. In the text, there are several distinct scenes or images. And I want to lay them out, and then we'll shift from one to the next, to the next, to the next. Each scene is a little bit different, and sometimes you won't see how they go together, but hopefully by the end you will. So for some of you this morning, this is going to be difficult. I know some people are more adept at using their imaginations, and some of us don't use it quite as much. Whatever the case, I want to encourage you to do your best to listen to what I'm saying and describing so that it will illuminate the text. If it helps for you to close your eyes when I'm describing a scene, do that. You're welcome to do that. I won't think you're falling asleep, though don't actually fall asleep. I might notice that. In most cases, the setting or scene I'm describing is the backdrop for the text, okay? So most of the time, you're going to hear me describe, and then you'll hear the text. Like, I'll say the text. And if you want to listen, you'll hear me describing, we'll enter into scenes, and then I'll say something like, then the voice of Yahweh says. And if you want to have your passage there in front of you to just glance at it real quick so that you can see exactly what I'm saying, the text that I'm reading, you're welcome to do that. But that's going to kind of be how it functions. If you only look at the text and you're not paying attention to the scenes that I'm setting, you might be a little bit lost. So I'm going to encourage you to dig in and engage, do your best to listen and pay attention to the scenes that are being painted and the emotions that are being produced as we read the text. There's a lot going on here, but I believe all of it is driving toward two things to help us not be afraid. One, that the Lord is capable and worthy. And then two, that he's with us. But before we get started, I want to pray. Father, moving through this text has been so incredibly powerful for me this week. I honestly wish I could just simply transfer some of what I feel in the text to the people in this room. God, will you help that happen? God, today I see more of you. You are God, worthy of all our worship. You are supremely strong. a capable leader, and yet you are with us. You are near us as a compassionate, shepherding Father. Show us more of who you are so that we will be reminded that we can trust you fully and not live in fear. Okay. Are you ready? Using your imagination, let's begin walking through this text together. Isaiah 41 opens in a courtroom. I want you to picture a man standing at the front of a large open-air space, projecting his voice to the crowd. Though you have not seen him before, you recognize him as Isaiah the prophet. Isaiah is speaking as the representative of the Lord, Yahweh. Though more than just a representative, he speaks with the authority and the voice of the Lord himself. He stands at the front calling out to the people in the room. In the room, you look around and there are many people observing. The most conspicuous people present is a large group of the people of Israel. Though you also look around and realize there's a lot of other people here too. The voice through Isaiah says, verse 1, "Listen to me in silence, O coastlands. Let the peoples renew their strength. Let them approach. Then let them speak. Let us together draw near for judgment." A trial is starting. The voice of the Lord beckons the room to be silent. Specifically, he speaks to the group who do not worship him, that are in the room, that are in the corner of the room chattering. They are elsewhere in the Old Testament referred to as the nations or the peoples of the earth. They are Gentiles, not presently part of God's people. Imagine the view of the courtroom begins to fade into the background, but the voice of the Lord speaking through Isaiah continues as loudly as before. It's as though you are still in the courtroom, but now you begin to see a series of images being brought to your mind as evidence for the court proceeding. Now, when I say these are images, you could almost call them visions or short movie clips. Imagine someone handed you a pair of virtual reality goggles as evidence, 6 videos to watch. Take the goggles, put them on. The first video starts, a title flashes on the screen. You see the words, "Sovereign over Kings." You find yourself standing, looking down on a massive life-size map. The map is divided into sections and places representing countries and kingdoms in the ancient Middle East. On the west, near the Mediterranean Sea, you see the land of Israel. It's clearly been conquered. You see the temple, it's demolished, and the Jerusalem walls are torn down. In the middle of the map is Babylon. As you look down and see the map, you see people. Specifically, you see the dejected and anxious people of Israel enslaved, having been exiled to Babylon. They have chains on them. It's clear they don't want to be there. In Babylon, there's a large golden statue in the middle of the country. Many of the people are bowing down to it, except for a few men standing and refusing. There's a large smokestack with fire coming out and a king sitting on a throne pointing at the standing Israelite men. This has not happened yet in the book of Isaiah. It won't happen in the book of Isaiah. This exile is still coming. Then you look to the east, and there is a horde of people with another king sitting on a throne. The king looks up to the sky as if he has heard a voice speaking to him. He gets up off his throne, onto his horse, and begins to ride west toward Babylon with a horde of soldiers following behind him. This is King Cyrus from Persia, which is east of Babylon. The king and his army move across the map quickly. As they travel, there are other smaller kingdoms that names you can't even read along the way on the map. But as he meets them, they are crushed by the wheels of his chariots, and the feet of his soldiers smash them. Your view zooms in, and you see a glimmering Persian sword being swung through the air in the hands of a warrior. As it meets the body of these opposing soldiers and kings, the people dissolve as it touches them. They instantly turn to dust as the sword swings through their body. The dust flies everywhere, but ultimately falls to the ground and blows away in the wind. Again, you look and you see a large group of archers draw back their bows and release taut strings. You hear the shouts of war and the wispy twang of hundreds of bows as the arrows fly through the air. As they strike the opposing armies, the soldiers fall and roll over backwards as if they were hundreds of small rocks being swiped away with a large hand. This king and his nation was conquering, but somehow you know behind this king is not magic. The Lord is driving them towards Babylon to rescue and free his people from their enslavement. Then you hear the voice of the Lord through Isaiah over the top of the images you're seeing. Verse 2, "Who stirred up one from the east, whom victory meets at every step? He gives up nations before him so that he tramples kings underfoot. He makes them like dust with his sword, like driven stubble with his bow. He pursued them and passes on safely by paths his feet have not trod. Who has performed and done this, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, the first and with the last, I am he." God declares himself to be behind this army. He is sovereign over kings and kingdoms. From first to last, there is no one that operates outside of his ultimate power and control. The images of the armies and the map fade, and a second video begins. Again, words flash up on the screen, a title. It reads, "Foolish and Futile." This time, imagine yourself, you're just on the outside of a small group of men gathered around an anvil just outside a blacksmith's house. You're not with Israelites. Clearly, you are in some other country, but you're certain that some of these people were in the courtroom. You watch as the goldsmith's hand reaches up with a small hammer, then strikes a piece of hot, soft gold. He's making something. The men around him watch closely. Some are helping. One thing is clear about this group, though. These men are terrified of something. They are incredibly anxious as they work. One man's hands shake with fear as he holds the hot gold with a pair of tongs. They look at this piece of gold as though it's being shaped to be something important, something that will protect or rescue them. One of them looks at another and says, "Be strong. We'll be all right." The gold shaping continues. You stand there for a while watching. One of them, after attaching a small piece of gold, grasps it with his shaking fingers to make sure it's going to stay connected, that the solder would hold. Then the goldsmith picks up a metal awl and pokes small holes at the base. Then, taking a block of wood and nails, one of the men attached their new golden statue to a stand so that it can't fall over. They look at each other as though they had just solved their biggest problem. They knelt down and began to pray to their new golden idol. Then you hear the voice of the Lord again, spoken through Isaiah, as you stand looking at these men bowing down to their idol. Verse 5, "The coastlands have seen and are afraid. The ends of the earth tremble. They have drawn near and come. Everyone helps his neighbor and says to his brother, 'Be strong.' The craftsman strengthens the goldsmith, and he who smooths with the hammer, him who strikes the anvil, saying of the soldering, 'It's good.' And they strengthen it with nails so that it cannot be moved." The tone of Isaiah's voice is one of intensity, but a sense of irony. The story is both sad, but also almost comical. The foolishness of what these men were doing was obvious compared to the previous story, where the voice of the Lord was driving Cyrus, the Persian king, across the map as he crushed kings and kingdoms. The images of these idol worshipers disappear. A third video begins. Again, a title flashes in front of your eyes. It says, "Fear not," with three exclamation marks. This time, you find yourself sitting in the courtroom, sitting among the people of Israel. And Isaiah speaks again, looking at you and the people of Israel around you. It's as though the room darkens around his face and his eyes. You see intense strength, but they are also full of tender, shepherd-like compassion. The strength and love of the Lord was clearly coming through in the words Isaiah was speaking, like a strong, good, and caring father speaks to his child about something serious. The voice of the Lord speaks again, verse 8. "But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend, you whom I took from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest corner, saying to you, 'You are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you off.'" The words in the mouth of Isaiah are striking. He called Isaiah his servant, not like a slave, but more like a helper or a partner. He sees him as a specially fashioned tool that he has shaped to do his work on the earth. The Lord had specially chosen them. And though they were in Babylon, he had not forgotten them or cast them off. He had not rejected them. They are offspring of Abraham, who was the Lord's friend, Isaiah called him. The friend whom God had made great promises. God's choice of them and his committed love for them was built on God's committed promise to Abraham. The Lord continues to encourage his people, saying in verse 10, "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." He said, "Fear not. Don't be dismayed." And then he gives reasons why you don't need to fear or be dismayed. He says, "I'm with you. I, the sovereign, powerful Lord of history, is with you. And I am your God." His close presence and his strong, grace-giving, compassionate character undergird his committed strength, help, his righteous right hand upholding. In the first two videos, you saw two kinds of strengthening and encouraging happening. In the first one, God strengthened the king to trample his opposition on his way to rescue Israel and overthrow Babylon. And in the other, a panicked group of idol worshipers attempting to strengthen and encourage each other by fashioning a piece of gold as though it had the power to help them. The first, power and destiny. The second, ridiculous and foolish. And here God says to Israel, this people whom he fashioned and to whom he remains committed, this people whom he is present with, "I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." This is the type of encouragement an exiled people needs. They wondered if God had abandoned them. The God who undergirds conquering kings and sovereignly rules over the earth is their God, not the empty, blind, deaf, and powerless gods made by people. This video fades. And a fourth video begins, but the words that God is with his people continue to echo. And the title pops up and says, "Fear Not, Part 2. This time, you walk among God's people on a battlefield. However, you are somehow shorter than everyone else. You look up to the soldiers that are around you. You walk as though you're a child. And you're holding a parent's hands, not as a soldier, but as a child. As you look around you, there's no opposing army to fight. They are all either dead or gone. The battlefield is calm. As you observe this scene, you remember the story of Hezekiah and how in the morning after the siege of Jerusalem, the people of Judah went out to discover that the Lord had annihilated the entire army, 185,000 people overnight, utterly destroying Sennacherib's army. Some of the soldiers around you look as though they are searching for the enemy still, but they are nowhere to be found. The Lord speaks again, verse 11. Behold, all who are incensed against you shall be put to shame and confounded. Those who strive against you shall be as nothing and shall perish. You shall seek those who contend with you, but you shall not find them. Those who war against you shall be as nothing at all. For I, the Lord your God, hold your right hand. It is I who say to you, fear not. I am the one who helps you. You recall what God said before, that he would uphold you with his righteous right hand. But here he is holding your right hand. He must be holding your right hand with his left. The shepherding, tender care of God for his people is profound here. He leads caringly and protects strongly. They have no reason to fear because God is with them, holding them in one hand and protecting them with the other, capable and caring. He is the perfect, trustworthy companion for a weak, poor, dejected, exiled people. The video ends, and a fifth video begins. The title reads, A Fashioned Tool. This time, you see a large frame of ragged wooden timbers strapped together with ropes. The timbers are tipped up against a wall and a worker pounds in pieces of metal and sharp rocks onto its surface. It looks dangerous, but not like a weapon, more like a sharp tool. A person standing next to you says, it's a threshing sledge. And you are standing on a large hard surface. In front of you are sheaves of grain, stacks of it spread out on the ground. You look up just as these timbers tied together with sharp things on the bottom is tipped over and then attached to an ox. You watch as the animal is guided around the room, dragging the heavy timbers. It scrapes the grain. You can hear it cracking and scraping on the ground and pulling through the grain. As the timbers drag across the room, you see kernels of wheat start to separate from the husk. And other workers gather the grain, and the dry, flimsy chaff left over blows away in the wind. You begin to see the functionality of the threshing sledge that you saw made. It's a tool with a purpose. The threshing sledge continues around the space, but then begins to move away from the grain to open spaces, fields and mountains. The threshing sledge is driven over a large mound. It disappears as it scrapes over the top. And then towards mountains, the mountains are crushed, like a large bulldozer leveling the grade and making a path smooth. As the threshing sledge moves across the mountains and strong winds begin to blow, you hear the Lord speak again. Verse 14. Fear not, you worm, Jacob, you men of Israel. I am the one who helps you, declares the Lord. Your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. Behold, I make of you a threshing sledge, new, sharp, and having teeth. You shall thresh the mountains and crush them, and you shall make the hills like chaff. You shall winnow them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the tempest shall scatter them. And you shall rejoice in the Lord. In the Holy One of Israel, you shall glory. God's intention was to take his servant and make them something used to separate wheat from chaff, something that destroys obstacles. The barrier set in front of them, whether sin, oppressors, or whatever else would be overcome, not because they are in and of themselves something to be reckoned with, but because of what the Lord, their capable and caring God, will shape them to be and will use them to do. And he did not say they will rejoice in their greatness and glory in their might, They will not be impressed with themselves, but they will rejoice in the Lord, Yahweh. They will glory in the great God of Israel because of what He has made them to do. This video fades to black. The sixth and last video begins. The title reads, Provider and Creator. You find yourself standing on the edge of a cliff with the sun beating down on your skin, looking down at a dry and barren wilderness. It's hot and the dirt beneath your feet is dry and dusty. In fact, you are yourself covered in dust. It's as though you've been walking for days in the desert. Your mouth is pasty and dry like the dust you've been walking on. The dirty clothes you're wearing are ragged and your skin red from the burn of the sun. It hurts. You look up to the sky in desperation and say, "Help, Lord." Then you look out again and the landscape begins to change. As you hear the voice of the Lord through Isaiah say, verse 17, "When the poor and needy seek water and there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst, I, the Lord, will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers on the bare heights and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water." Suddenly you look down and water is bubbling from under your feet. You quickly reach down and scoop some into your mouth, instantly feeling the cool refreshment. The bubble turns into a brook, which turns into a stream and begins to flow off the side of the cliff like a waterfall. You step back and watch the flowing water rapidly grow and begin to fill the dry valley over which you are looking. And suddenly, trees start to pop up on the side of the stream and around this pool of water. They seem to grow from inches to 40 feet in the span of a few minutes. Lots of trees with fruit hanging on them, and other places, tall, sturdy trees, the kind made for building things. The voice continues, verse 19. "I will put in the wilderness the cedar, the acacia, the myrtle, and the olive. I will set in the desert the cypress, the plane, and the pine together, that they may see and know, may consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord has done this. The Holy One of Israel has created it." The anchoring result of this miraculous and amazing provision by God is that the world, not just Israel, may see and know and understand together that the Lord is the great independent actor in the universe. He is the Holy One of Israel. He's the creator of all things good. There is no God like Him. The idols on which others depend are dust and wind, powerless, useless. The strong, powerful, sovereign Lord of history, the great creator in the world, He is the ultimate power, undergirding and steering kings and kingdoms for His glory. The virtual reality goggles come off. The videos are over. The trial takes a break for today. The message of Isaiah to the people of Israel as they were heading into exile is exactly what they needed to hear. He reminded them of the futility of the gods to where they were going, that His sovereign hand is underneath it all, and that He's going to rescue them eventually. He reminded them that He will use them, and that He has good plans for the future. And this is all grounded in a commitment to show, demonstrate His own worthiness, His glory to the world. And to His people, He had a specific message. He said, "Don't be afraid. Why? How could I not be afraid in this situation, heading into exile? Because I am with you. Don't be dismayed. Don't be anxious. I am your God, he says. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And guys, this is the same message he has for us today. He says, don't be afraid. Look at me. I'm sturdy. I'm capable. And I'm with you. I'm near to you like a father. I love you. You know, around the dinner table this week, I asked my kids what was the scariest moment they ever experienced. They had a lot of answers. We talked about the derecho. We talked about, various things, whether it's the dark or heights and, you know, some of those things. But then also talked about, fear for friends' safety. I think it's a really good question to ask. I encourage you to ask it. Ask it to your kids. Have a conversation about that. We've lived in a place with a lot of fear. It's a good thing to talk about. If you don't have kids, get together with some friends and talk about it. But I don't want you to dwell on just that. I want you to ask, what would the God of Isaiah 41 say to us now in the midst of this fear, the things that we're afraid of? I know for me, one of my most fearful moments was in the hospital room shortly after my youngest, Isaiah, was born. Amanda was generally feeling good. She had made it through labor, went great, and we were so excited about our new baby boy. She even felt good enough to get up and walk to the other room where a nurse was helping her. As I sat there waiting in the room for her to return, I heard the nurse who was with Amanda call for help because she, quote, had a bleeder. The words rung in my ears, but I didn't know what it meant. What followed was a series of events that I could only sit and watch as doctors and nurses worked to save my wife from an internal bleed that would not stop. There was nothing I could do as they performed incredibly painful procedures right there as I watched and heard and I held Amanda's hand. I don't know how long it was, but it felt like hours. They finally got her stable, and obviously she's here today, and I'm so grateful. But I'll never forget walking out of the room to see my parents to tell them she was okay. I sat down next to them, and before I said anything, my dad, a doctor, who knows exactly what I had just been through, what we had just been through, reached over and hugged me tight. He didn't say anything. He just held me. He, one of my closest friends, someone I greatly admired, just sat and held me as I wept in his arms. Now, when I asked my kids about the fearful memory, the thing that stood out to me the most was their concern about their friends and family, and even their pets. They were more concerned about their friends and family than they were about even themselves, about whether they were going to be hurt in the thing. And what I find interesting about that is that that's how God responds to our pain. And it's what we see in this text, not just our pain, but our fear. We see that in this text. He's here displaying his glory. And he pauses in the middle to say something to his people. He says, don't be afraid. These things are happening. Don't be afraid. But this promise is not just to the people of Israel. It's to us too. The reason that I can say that is Galatians 3, where it says that we are the offspring of Abraham. We are heirs according to the promise of God made to Abraham. Do you remember what he said? He said, I wanted to read it. He said, "But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I've chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend." The message of the gospel tells us that we gain the benefits of God's people because we have been linked to Jesus. We've been tied to him. We hide inside him. And the promises are only available to those who put their faith in Jesus, who look to him as their security, as the thing that they put all their hope in. You see, sin has separated us all from God, every one of us, including the people of Israel. But God sent Jesus to rescue us. He came, he lived a perfect life that God expected of humanity. And then he paid the penalty of death, a penalty that we deserve because we did not live the lives that God requires as the Holy One of Israel. And Jesus did this in our place and opened a way so that all who hide in him, who put their faith in him, who stand on him, can be rescued. And they can be beneficiaries of a promise made to Abraham. This means that if you've put your faith in Jesus, you can look at verses 8 through 10. You should memorize it. You should dwell on it. You should think about it. It's a message to us. He says, "But you, Israel, my servant," or "But you, O church, the bride of my son, the body of my son, whom I've chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend, you whom I took from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest corner, saying to you, 'You are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you off. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand.'" The God who holds the universe in the palm of his hand is present with you, and he is your God. Let's pray.